Good morning. My name is Leah Lopez, and I'm a student at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Today, I'm here with Dr. Tom Wingfield, who is a senior clinician lecturer at LSTM, and we are going to discuss a topic which has been trending in the past few weeks, or even in the past year. This broad and many times difficult topic to talk about is burnout syndrome. It has been more and more in our minds since the start of the COVID pandemic, I must say. First, let me say also that Dr. Wingfield is an infectious diseases physician and an honorary research associate at the University of Liverpool. Welcome, Dr. Wingfield. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm fine. I'm probably feeling slightly burnt out myself currently, so it might be a good time to talk about these things.
Thank you, Dr. Wingfield. And you have written articles published in The Conversation during the first wave of COVID as well in April 2019, which seems like so long ago, and again during the second wave, about experiences as a frontline healthcare worker in Liverpool. But first of all, let's define what we're talking about. What does it mean to be burnout? And most importantly, what do people refer to when they talk about burnout? The official World Health Organization definition would be that it is a syndrome resulting from chronic workplace stress and that has not been successfully managed. Symptoms can range from the so-called honeymoon phase, or when you're feeling absolutely proactive and enthusiastic about your work, or to the onset of stress. Self-doubt is isolation and even chronic mental and physical fatigue. And why do we care about this now? Well, for starters, already in August 2020, in a survey of 4,000 doctors by the British Medical Association, a third of them reported increased stress and anxiety related to COVID. You wrote about this in your article, right, Dr. Wingfield?
Yes, absolutely, I did. It was something that I think was nice to see in terms of numbers, because it was what we were actually feeling and seeing and talking about amongst ourselves on the ground, on the wards.
So why do you think it's important that we talk about burnout now? I mean, do you think the COVID pandemic has contributed to burnout among healthcare workers?
So, yeah, I do, Leah, I do. I think if we look back, first of all, if we take a step back and we look towards other outbreaks specifically, so if we look to SARS, the SARS outbreak, and the West African Ebola outbreak and crisis in 2014-15, if you look back to some of the studies that were done then within healthcare workers, there were much higher rates of anxiety, guilt, shame, depression, mental illness, and even sadly some increases in the use of alcohol and drugs amongst healthcare workers due to fatigue and stress experienced by those outbreaks. And I think that COVID will be no different, and indeed maybe more severe, given it's been a pandemic and has affected a huge amount of healthcare workers around the world. So obviously, you know, my experience is in the UK, but I have colleagues who are in other countries and have also done clinical work in other countries myself, so I understand the situations that there are. I mean, I think we should have been talking about burnout a long time before COVID, because I think there's, as you'll know, probably we'll talk about, there's so many different reasons for burnout, and you can burn out in your standard job as well, because we're all busy in the healthcare setting. But yet, COVID, I think, has definitely contributed to an increase. And in some of these surveys that were done, you mentioned a survey from the British Medical Association. There's also other work to suggest that people are, especially from the doctoring side, are considering moving their career and potentially leaving the NHS or leaving healthcare for good. And I think some of those decisions are directly affected by having worked through the pandemic.
Yes, I completely agree. In fact, the pandemic is something that's also affected the distribution of burnout among healthcare workers. For example, critical care physicians are now at the top of the list, and infectious diseases specialists also on the top three as well. And you've experienced this reality when, also working as a frontline healthcare worker, right?
Yeah, I think that We have. And obviously, this will affect different people in different ways. And in you mentioned the articles in the conversation that myself and Professor Miriam Techmeyer wrote, and we wrote about four overall over the course of the pandemic. I think one of the key issues is that healthcare workers, as we said, have a stiff upper lip. Especially, I think, in the UK. And by a stiff upper lip, I mean that often people don't actually talk about the issues that they're experiencing, don't share them. And indeed, there aren't, or at least were not, great mechanisms in place to support the mental health and well-being of healthcare workers over the course of the pandemic. We have seen on the front line, on the wards, doctors, nurses, other healthcare professionals, really, I think, at times at breaking points emotionally, people needing to let off steam, people, you know, crying, being angry, upset about what they were seeing. And I think having a mechanism whereby you can express that and you feel in a safe place to do that is important. And we have seen an increase in the amount of counselling services that have been offered to healthcare workers throughout the pandemic. I think that's something that's very positive. But I hope that it's not just something that is a response to COVID, and then when things become, you know, normalised, whatever that means with COVID, that they become something that again falls to the wayside. I think there's something that should be there as a routine to support people who need it. And I have... you know, personal experience of a colleague and friend who has used the services regularly in his hospital, not in Liverpool, in another part of the country, and has really found them helpful, the counselling services to be very helpful in supporting him through his own personal professional journey through COVID. So I think this is important, but I think as you, from being a general practitioner, that's right, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
As well, yeah. I think, as you'll know, as me, as an infectious diseases doctor, I think prevention is much better than cure. And I think that if we can make this a routine thing, that support being offered, that it's okay to talk about these stresses and strains, I really think that that will be the road forward.
Absolutely. I believe it's important, like you said, not to normalize it, because we normally tend to have certain beliefs about burnout syndrome that make it difficult for people to recognize it and address it. As you said, having a stiff upper lip, a general assumption also that those who get burned out are people who just don't like their job enough, who are said to are just not made for the profession, let's say. Actually, the reality is that people who love their profession the most are the most risk of burnout as well, because they identify with their job so much that it's difficult for them to put the limit between work and personal life. And I think during the pandemic, that must have been so difficult for so many of my colleagues and your colleagues, having relatives who are also ill or in need of care because they are vulnerable. How do you think the current pressures that healthcare workers having to deal with so many patients can affect the patient care?
I think that sadly it negatively impacts upon patient care, and it not only negatively impacts upon patient care, but it impacts upon the self-care of healthcare workers. So their ability to look after themselves and deal with their own health and well-being. Just as an example, to let people who are listening to this know that although we see in the UK the case numbers in the community seem to be coming down at the minute, which is probably multifactorial, down to weather, no football being on at the minute, schools closing, a multitude of things. And I'm glad to see that, but I expect that there will be some increase in September. But the rates of admissions we've got in the hospital are through the roof. And I've worked for 18 years in the NHS, and I have never seen the hospital is busy, or a hospital is busy as currently, and we're in the middle of summer. And this is a mixture of people with COVID and non-COVID. So actually more people with non-COVID, because perhaps they haven't been able to get the care that you alluded to before, the care that they required. And when we talk about care quality going down during COVID, obviously there is that direct effect of exhausted, tired, demoralized healthcare workers who aren't able to provide the care that they would like to. But there's also the kind of wider systems issues of the system being exhausted, and that goes for primary care and secondary care as well. And so people not being able to get the care for chronic conditions that they would normally get, people themselves feeling scared to come into hospital. Indeed, especially those with mental health issues, actually, from personal experience, people with mental health issues said, I didn't want to present to healthcare, I was scared of getting COVID. And I think what we're seeing now is a wave of people with these conditions. We had 60 people waiting for beds in our accident and emergency department, for medical beds, not surgical beds, in summer, which is absolutely unheard of. And so I think it's important for us to realise that not only on an individual level do these waves of COVID, wave one, two, three, or even four here in Liverpool, have a knock-on effect, but they also each time, I think, erode the health system that little bit more on what we provide. And we're seeing winter now, winter rates in the middle of summer, which I think is pretty terrifying when we consider what might happen in winter. When we are opened up and we have a round of flu, paraflu, rhinoviruses, respiratory syncytial viruses, which are all common winter bugs, doing the rounds that weren't around last winter because we were shut down. We saw tiny rates of them. So, I think there's the individual issues. I think care is reduced, but also the system as a whole, I think, that has been put under such pressure that care inevitably was reduced during the waves and is still constrained now, even if this current wave starts to kind of resolve.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you said it rightly. It seems like there's one problem after the other, and it just looks endless right now. And I'm glad that we're talking about this because there's so many doctors who are starting their careers probably, and doctors who are on foundation year one, two, right? And what is burnout, right? So they haven't experienced probably yet, or probably they have, but there are many healthcare workers who are unaware of the initial symptoms, the honeymoon phase, easily overlooked, which is actually when you feel good, you want to do more. We tend to be unaware of the dangers of not keeping a good work-life balance here. And when someone mentions burnout to us, probably will be it's not going to happen to me. However, most people tend to associate burnout with the final stage. Like you said, the one where we have the chronic mental health, physical fatigue. There are actually a total of five stages, starting with neglecting personal needs and starting to feel stressed some days. We tend to normalize feeling pressured, particularly if you have a duty of care. And this can lead to denial of our initial symptoms, of course. Do you think, based on your experience, do you think there's a wide awareness of burnout syndrome among healthcare workers?
I don't. And I also don't think that there is much awareness from the health system, or at least much acknowledgement of burnout amongst healthcare workers. If you look at the Ebola crisis, for example, in 2014-15, people who were deployed to work there, it varied, but often people had an evaluation for their individual resilience, what their personality was like, what they previously experienced, and how vulnerable they might be to some of the issues that you are raising. And we don't have that within our NHS. I've never had an assessment, I've never known anyone have assessment of how resilient they might be or how vulnerable they might be to these things. And I think that this is something that is important to do. I also think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about normalizing these levels of stress and the initial feelings of that might come about through those stages of burnout. And I think we need to move away from that. I think, especially across generations, at least of doctors, I'm not so sure of nurses and physiotherapists and healthcare assistants, but there is that thing of, well, we did it, so why don't you do it? As in, we worked, you know, one in two shifts, why don't you do it? And I think that's a really unhelpful thing to say, because workloads change, the pattern of work changes dramatically, and just because someone put up with it in the past doesn't mean we have to put up with it now. The other thing that I think you brought up that I think is really important is the conflict as a healthcare worker that you feel between your duty of care to your patient, but your duty to yourself to keep yourself well. And I think that a lot of healthcare workers put to one side sometimes their own duty of care to themselves and put above it the duty to their patients. And if that is propped up by the system saying, well, you in some way are a failure, or you have, you're not made for this, you're not cut out for this, as you mentioned earlier, I think that system is flawed. And I think that that's only going to lead to more issues in the long run. And it's quite a short-sighted response to this.
Interesting, yes. And I think that by talking about it that we're doing now, we aim to create more awareness and provide information about where to go or call if you feel like it would be worthwhile talking to someone about it. And do you think that, for example, the average healthcare worker knows about the Maslach Burnout Inventory, MBI, which is a score that can be calculated know how, like you mentioned before, if you can show the first signs of burnout, do you think that that's something that people are aware of?
So from a personal experience, until we met to kind of talk about this interview and this podcast, I wasn't aware of that. And I think that many, many healthcare workers would not be aware of that. And I think to make people aware of that could be useful. I think there is a role here for occupational health to perhaps look beyond health, and maybe it should be called occupational health and well-being. I think that hospital occupational health departments could step in and could potentially have more regular reviews with their staff as a routine to do things like you're talking about, to measure how that staff member is. And to offer at least signposting for themselves as a conduit towards further counselling and, if needed, mental health support.
Yes, I completely agree. In fact, I spoke with Dr. Andrew Bench, who is an occupational health physician at the LSTM, and he has kind of given us more information about the services available. So there is a general well-being support helpline for all staff across the whole of the NHS, which is 0300-131-7000. And it's available 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day, providing emotional support for trained volunteers and onward signposting to specialist financial advice, bereavement care and coaching as well. Finally, there's also local support available provided by Mercy Care, which is 0151-330-8103. And it's a 24/7 telephone counseling service. So I think it is a start. Like you said, this should be routine, that we should be getting used to assessing ourselves and looking for help and questioning whether we are having a good work-life balance.
So I totally agree. Totally agree. And I think that's something that has gone under the radar for many years, but I think it's really time to address that.
Thank you, Dr. Winfield, and thank you for your time, for joining us today. I think it's really important that we start talking about this.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for putting it together.
Again, that was Dr. Tom Winfield, infectious diseases physician, senior clinical lecturer at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and frontline healthcare worker as well. Thank you.